Want to call the meeting to order? Mr. Crawford, can you please lead us in the pledge?
I would be honored. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
I want to apologize to our public for not starting on time. There are a couple of corrections in the agenda that I would like to bring to your attention. The first one is on page 9, if you could go to page 9 of your agenda. Personnel Services, number 3, at the top of page 9. It's Anna L. Correa, Elementary School Secretary, Edgewater, 8-hour, 10.25 months, permanent to Administrative Secretary 3/DO, 8-hour. You'll notice after 8-hour, it says 10.5-hour. That should be 10.5 months, probationary. So it's just typo from hour to month. Then if you could turn to page 13. Page 13, item number 2. The 21 MJUSD proposed pandemic school reopening plan. In the purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve rephasing in elementary grade levels when public health officials permit schools to resume in-person blended instruction and to phase in. Phase in should be changed to open and open secondary schools beginning 2/16/21. So changing phase in to open. Announcement of action taken in closed session. There was no action to announce in closed session. Next, we have the announced election results. Announce the following election results from the 11-3-20 election pursuant to Ed Code 15400. Trustee Area 2, votes cast, 5,833 votes cast. Gary Criddle received 2,807 votes. Trustee Area 3, votes cast was 6,689 votes. Allison Hasty received 2,880 votes. Trustee Area 4, votes cast, 8,341 votes. Doug Criddle received 2,776 votes. Welcome to our new board members. Next, we have the annual organizational meeting of the Board of Trustees. Mr. Cena?
Hey, thank you, Trustee Rasmussen. On November 10th at the board meeting, the board set this meeting, December 15th, for election of officers. And so tonight, what we're going to do is we are required to elect a president and a clerk. And for our district, we also elect a vice president and a trustee rep, a person who represents the board on various committees and serves on in that role. So first of all, on page 3, it has the process for nomination of officers. So I'll review it real quick just so we have a clear understanding. First of all, the process, there's not a second to nominate a person to stand for election. After each nomination, the board member nominated will either accept or decline. A motion is not made to close the nomination. After all nominations have been made and the person nominated accepts or declines the nomination, then a motion for the first nominated candidate will take place. The first nomination that receives the majority vote in the affirmative is elected to the position, and no further votes will be taken on the remaining nominations. Are there any clarification questions?
No, I'd like to make a nomination if that's okay, Mr. Cena.
Oh, okay, I'll yes, just a second here. So we will begin with the election of the president. Okay, the floor is open for nominations for president.
I'd like to nominate Randy Rasmussen.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Rasmussen, would you accept that nomination?
I would accept.
Okay, so Allison, or Trustee Allison Hasty has nominated Trustee Rasmussen, and he has accepted. Any other nominations?
I'd like to nominate Jeff Boom.
Okay. Trustee Boone, would you accept?
Yeah, I think I will. I'll accept.
Okay. So Trustee Doug Criddle has nominated Trustee Jeff Boone. Are there other nominations for president? Okay. Hearing none. We'll go to the first nomination for Trustee Rasmussen. So those in favor of what will be a roll call vote.
So, Mr. Seaman, first there needs to be a...
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Yes. Okay, so first
there needs to be a
with for Trustee Rasmussen, the chair recognizes... welcomes a motion on the first nominee.
Two.
Is there a nomination for the first nominee, Mr. Rasmussen?
Are you asking for a vote?
No, Mr. Davis. I'm asking for if a motion for. The first nominee, Mr. Rasmussen.
I make the motion to accept Randy Rasmussen as our president.
Okay, a motion has been made by Trustee Davis. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, the second by Trustee Hasty. Okay, now we'll have a roll call vote. And it's in alphabetical order. So first vote, Trustee Boone.
No.
Okay. Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle.
No.
Trustee Gary Criddle.
No.
Trustee Randy Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Hasty.
Yes.
And Trustee Rasmussen.
Yes.
Okay, so there's four votes yes, three votes no for Trustee Rasmussen as president. So Mr. Rasmussen was elected president with four yes votes and will take over the remaining election of officers.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Next, we have the nomination for vice president. We're opening the nominations for vice president. Anyone want to recommend or nominate for a vice president?
I recommend.
I'll nominate Frank Crawford.
I'm sorry, it seemed like we had two people.
Yeah, Randy Davis is recommending Frank Crawford as vice president.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Davis. Mr. Crawford, do you accept?
Well, I am honored that Mr. Davis considers me for vice president, but and I've never done this before. I've served as president and I served as vice president of the school board. But I think with the new board members and give them a fair shake of what it's like, I'd like to nominate Gary Criddle and decline myself. Thank you.
Okay, so Mr. Crawford, you decline and you're nominating Mr. Crawford?
No, I'm nominating Gary Criddle.
Okay, kind of had that all going together.
No, I'm not nominating myself.
Mr. Gary Criddle, do you accept or decline?
I accept.
Okay. Are there any other nominations for vice president? Okay. So Mr. Gary Criddle is the first nominee for the only nominee for vice president. Mr. Gary Criddle has been nominated to serve as vice president. Do I have a motion for Mr. Criddle?
Motion to approve Mr. Criddle.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Doug Criddle. Okay, roll call vote. Trustee Boone?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Randy Davis?
No.
Trustee Hasty? Trustee Hasty? You're muted.
Sorry, yes.
And Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Okay, motion carries. Mr. Gary Criddle is our vice president. Next, we move to the clerk. Are there any nominations for clerk?
I'd like to nominate Allison Hasty.
Mr. Crawford. Nominate Mrs. Hasty. Mrs. Hasty, do you accept or decline?
I accept.
Okay. Any other nominations for clerk? Not hear any. Is there a motion?
Motion to accept.
Okay. Motion by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Doug Criddle. Okay, roll call vote. Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Randy Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Allison Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen? Yes. Okay, motion carries. Trustee Hasty is our clerk. Next, we have the nominations for trustee representative for special education. Is there a nomination for trustee representative?
I would like to nominate Doug Criddle. I'm sorry, I got my Criddles confused. I know. Okay. You're Jack. Oh, good guy. That's how old I am.
So we have a motion by, or excuse me, we have a nomination.
Sorry.
On the wrong page. Okay, by Mr. Crawford or Mr. Doug Criddle. Mr. Doug Criddle, do you accept or decline?
I accept.
Okay. Are there any other nominations for trustee representative? Not hearing any. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to accept.
Okay. Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford.
Second.
Second by, who is the second by?
Gary Criddle.
Gary, thank you. Okay, roll call vote. Jeff Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries. Okay. Okay, next we have item number two, set date, time, and place of regular meetings. Recommend the board accept and schedule of board meeting dates as shown in special reports. Canceled meetings in 2021 is 1-12-21, 4-13-21, 6-8-21, 7-13-21, 7-27-21, 11-23-21, and 12-28-21. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Davis.
Well, I have a question.
Yes.
Didn't we get an email today about having a meeting on the 12th of January?
But these would be our regularly scheduled meetings.
Okay.
So that would be a special board meeting that wouldn't be on that regular scheduled meeting list.
All right.
Okay.
So you'd like a motion to approve? So moved.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Davis already. Is there a second?
Second.
Is that Mr. Doug Criddle?
Yes, sir.
Okay, roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Item number 3, appoint superintendent as secretary to the Board of Trustees. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mrs. Allison, or Mrs. Hasty, excuse me. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries. Item number 4, authorize superintendent and designees to sign warrants, contracts, and other documents. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Motion to approve.
So, was that you, Mrs. Hasty? Was that you first? Mrs.
Yes.
Hasty. Mrs. Hasty made a motion to approve. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Second?
Second.
Second
by Mr. Criddle. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries. Comments from board members. Mr. Davis.
The only comment I have for this evening is to wish everybody a nice holiday. I know it's not like it has been in years past, but I'm certainly hoping that people can take a breath and enjoy their celebrations. The second thing is to welcome the new members to the board, and certainly hoping that we come together for the benefit of our students and our staff. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Boone.
Yeah, I just wanted to welcome the new members also. And hopefully we can put 2020 behind us and move into 2021 with and have a much better year. Sorry, Randy, I've still got some after effects from being in the hospital today. So anyways, welcome everybody and happy holidays, and hope looking forward to a much better 2021 than 2020.
Thank you. Trustee Hasty.
I would like to echo what Mr. Davis and Mr. Boom have just said about welcoming and better 2021.
Thank you. Trustee Gary Criddle.
Same thing. Very happy to be here. Thank you, everyone. Looking forward to a great new year.
Trustee Doug Criddle.
It's hard to re-say everything here. You know, I did see something kind of interesting that my wife showed me that was a picture of Michael J. Fox and that wacky Professor Brown. And he said, whatever you do, don't go back to 2020. So that kind of sums it up right there. Moving forward, looking forward to working with everybody. And we're just we're extremely happy to be here.
Thank you. Trustee Crawford.
Well, I'll probably echo what everybody said. I'll add a little personal touch. I was lucky enough to coach Mrs. Hastings' husband, Brent, in high school. And as I stated earlier, I knew Bob Criddle. I worked with him when he was with the operating engineers. Your dad was a good man.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And all respect. And welcome to the board, all three of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So I would like to thank our outgoing board members for their dedication to Marysville Joint Unified School District, Mrs. Susan Scott, Mr. Jim Fleury, and Mr. Paul Allison. And welcome our three new board members, Mrs. Allison Hasty, Mr. Doug Criddle, Mr. Gary Criddle. In the history of Marysville Joint Unified, it was 1979 was the last time that we've had three new board members come on at one time. So welcome. Heard some great news today on the television that it looks like our vaccine for the COVID-19 has been delivered to California. I think it started some of the administration of it. So maybe that's going to get us to the light at the end of the tunnel, maybe. And also would just want to wish all the MJUSD stakeholders a joyous holiday. Next, we have opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association. Hi, Angela.
Hello, Mr. Rasmussen. So first off, also to welcome our new board members. It has been quite a while since we've welcomed three new board members all at once. So this is new. Also to echo the sentiments of quite a few people that 2020 can just be done. As one of my seniors told me today, 2020 was just trash. So I have our comments to the board from the union. As you are no doubt aware, negotiations between MUTA and the district have reached a total standstill. It appears that is the only thing on which the two sides agree. As such, we have declared impasse and we are headed to mediation. As for the issues, well, in all actuality, the issues really boil down to one critical overarching fact. The professional educators in this district desperately need relief from the crushing workload and beyond exhausting workday and work hours. a workload and hours that our district does not even acknowledge much, less attempt to relieve or rectify them. The only acknowledgement we have actually received involved being told that even if teachers were working so hard and so many hours, that it is merely because we are ineffective and inefficient, and therefore we simply need training on how to work. Your teachers have reached out to you for months. They have sacrificed time and energy that they really do not have to spare to implore you to ease their burden. Many have come to believe their words are falling on deaf ears. Your last meeting is indicative of why many feel the way they do. You have voted to spend $43,000 on a consultant under the guise of concern for our health, including our mental health and wellness. Prior to your vote, it was rather nonchalantly stated that the district has approximately $12 million in CARES Act funds they need to spend by December 31st. So you might as well spend some of it on this consultant, since $43,000 isn't much. During months at loggerheads over our health and safety MOU, we proposed the district spend $200,000 of CARES Act funds to purchase three-sided plexiglass barriers for teacher and student desks to help ensure the health and safety of our teachers and our students. And considering we were told no, it was too expensive, and considering the degrading homemade barriers that showed up in a number of classrooms with in-person learning, it is plainly evident the teachers are not the priority here. Plus, hiring a consultant who's paid $43,000 to serve on a committee, while overworked local union representatives are told they will not be paid and will serve as volunteers on same said committee, does nothing to help your cause to convince us differently. We don't need a consultant or a committee to help improve our health and wellness. We need respect. We need attentiveness to our words, our concerns, our input. We need acceptance of our experience, our expertise, and our professional knowledge, an acknowledgement that our workload is overbearing and out of control and in danger of burning out our teachers, which serves to put our very health and safety at serious risk. As anyone with even a modicum of medical knowledge can tell you, stress and exhaustion cause a weakening of one's immune system. I have a very difficult time fathoming how you can sit here tonight and even consider a reopening plan without even asking the teachers for their input or even pretending to address their recent concerns regarding health and safety, much less doing anything to alleviate our workload that is now compromising the health of innumerable teachers. So after all of that, here are some suggestions for how you might be able to help this situation. For one, accept our wisdom and hard-earned professional knowledge and agree to the means and methods we have proposed for 6 months on how to carry out your blended learning model. Follow through with what your negotiation team told us in July, that teachers would not be doing the hybrid and 100% distance learning, that they would, in fact, be doing one or the other. Also, follow through on all health and safety guidelines, protocols, and agreements, and spend some of your CARES Act funds that are burning a hole in your pocket to make that happen. Purchase the three-sided plexiglass barriers for teacher and student desks. Provide each teacher the two reusable, not disposable, masks as agreed to. Rent Connex boxes so we can get the extra desks and now empty Chromebook carts out of our classrooms. And not so you can cram more students in our classrooms, but so we can achieve 6 feet social distancing between student workstations. If you can't cancel your contract with Checkers, then at the very least, use some of your CARES Act funds to compensate your local union representatives for attending the meetings and doing the work of the committee. Your employees' time is just as valuable as any consultant's, actually more so, and you can use the CARES Act funds for them. Finally, listen. When we speak to you, when we come to these meetings and we pour our hearts out and we ask for your assistance and we ask for your help and we tell you, we provide you with our hard-earned knowledge, instead of clattering around in your kitchens and instead of doing any other thing that provides distraction to what we're saying, listen to what we're saying. Pay us some respect. We've earned it. Thank you.
Thank you. Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association, Number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Dr. Greco?
Thank you, Board Member Rasmussen. We just wanted to take a minute from the administrative team to thank all the new board members coming on and the old board members that haven't run away at this point. It's a really hard time to be on the board. You're going to be continually hit by multiple opinions. And as with most things in America right now, they come from diametrically opposed positions. And we just appreciate that you're all willing to take this opportunity to try to do what's best for the employees and the students of the district. And there's going to be a lot of tough decisions. So we thank you all very much for being here.
Thank you. Supervisory Union. Next, we have public comments. Note for teleconference meetings, please submit your public comment card located on the district webpage at www.mjusd.com. Under board, before the board meeting begins, persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out the public comment card before the start of the meeting, give it to the secretary, board president, or superintendent. The public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask they be heard during a specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per Board Bylaw 9323. The Ralph M. Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. The California Government Code Section 54954.2.A states, no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of the legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights under Section 54954.3. We do have public comments tonight. I would ask that you adhere to the 3 minutes. Mr. Carrion, you'll be our timekeeper. Thank you. Our first is Taisha Clemens. Ms. Clemens.
Good evening, board members. My name is Keisha Clemens, and I'm a special education teacher at Yuba Gardens. I want to follow along with what Angela was saying about being very concerned about our current union negotiations. I would encourage all the board members to attend negotiation meetings and help decide on what's best for all our stakeholders. In this case, the stakeholders who know the best for our students in this district are our teachers. To note, many teachers, 470 teachers actually in San Diego Unified, are retiring and not coming back in January, and many of the other districts across the country are losing teachers, whether it be to the pandemic or burnout or retirement. Now, we can't avoid retirement or pandemic, but you can absolutely avoid teacher burnout by instructing Mr. Carrion and Mr. Gant to negotiate in good faith with MUTA and support the requests of the MJUSD teachers. I can honestly say that I have been spending at least 15 hours plus above and beyond my paid time to create lessons, to grade, complete my special education paperwork, call parents, answering parents, and so much more as part of my duties and as a teacher. I can absolutely say with confidence that I will not have much of a break because I will continue to do this work to be better prepared to do my job to the best of my ability when we do return to school. In addition, you're also now asking me to prepare and teach both cohorts and create separate lessons for a distance learning, as well as be available for office hours and hold IEP meetings and do special education testing. There are enough teachers willing to take on a distance learning only or an in-person learning only to divvy up the tasks so it's less work for all of the teachers. Why not consider a reopening plan similar to Yuba City Unified, which utilizes teachers for distance learning academies and in-person hybrid? My also concern is our equity in education. We're talking about the distance learning students. Currently, according to LA Times, the state of California has failed COVID-19 pandemic to provide free and equal education to all students, violating the state constitution and discriminating against Black, Latino, and low-income families. As you well know, most of our population that we serve falls under those low-income families and Latino families. There are lawsuits against Oakland Unified, LA Unified, and other districts for lack of equity in education. We are missing out on an opportunity to provide that equity in education to those students who choose distance learning only by divvying up and following a plan similar to what Yuba City Unified has implemented. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Clement. Next public comment is Shauna Supat. Shauna?
Hi. First off, I'd like to say thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Shauna, and I have a student at LHS, and I work in the district as well. I'm wanting to speak about recommending the secondary level students back after Christmas break. It says 2/16. I realize that the younger kids are probably going to be able to go first, which I think is a mistake. As we've kind of seen, the younger kids don't need it as much as the older kids do. I feel that, honestly, our seniors should be able to go back first. It's really, really hard for them already. I do coach at LHS, and I am a para educator at Yuba Gardens, and the kids are struggling. We do the best we can, and it's really hard right now, and the suicide and the anxiety and the depression and all that is really high with kids 6 through 12. I honestly think that if the best recommendation would be to let seniors go back first and then slowly trickle in the other kids, just because this is their last year. They've already had so much taken from them, literally everything. The kids in 2020 missed out on the end of their year, but they did not miss out on everything. I'm just hoping that, you know, you guys can understand as a parent and as someone who works in the district that I really think that this is what's best for them. Yes, I understand health-wise, there's other people that don't agree, and I understand that's fine, but let us make that choice as a parent at that point if we decide to keep our kids home. My kid needs to be at school. She misses her friends. She misses being at school, and that's terrifying to say because, you know, she's a senior. You'd think that she loves being home. She misses it. Side note, I do agree with the teachers about doing one or the other. Right now I'm doing online with kids, and it's really, really hard as it is just doing online. And if they're doing both, that's just a lot. They should get twice the pay. I mean, it's insane trying to do both. I don't know how anyone's expected to do that. I have three kids in Yuba City District. So right now we're all doing online, but yeah, they did it to where they were doing either or in the younger grades. As far as the high school level or junior high level, I don't know how that's going to work. But I definitely agree that they should do one or the other, not both. I think it's too much on people. I mean, I'm working well over my 3.5 hours, which is totally fine, but I don't do anywhere near as much as them. And I think they deserve to have at least that, one or the other, not both. So I just hope you guys can understand where I'm coming from. Don't want to take up any more of your time, but I definitely think that these are things we should definitely be thinking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Schupat. Next, we have Colleen O'Rourke. Colleen?
Good evening. My name is Colleen O'Rourke. I'm a special education at Arboga Elementary, special education teacher at Arboga Elementary. I am concerned for our community, our teachers, administrators, school staff, students, and families. I understand that everyone would like to return to school. And I do mean everyone. We all want our kids to return. However, this illness is deadly. Over the weekend, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday combined, there were 568 new COVID cases in the Yuba Center area. 170 of those were in Yuba County. There are 62 people hospitalized, and there were 7 deaths over just those 3 days. To begin looking at reopening schools, we must think of the health and safety of everyone involved, not just the students. We all want students back. and to have everything back to normal. However, this is not possible until our local numbers are reduced to numbers from before October 31st. The surge that is happening is preventable if everyone followed guidelines in place, but not everyone does. If we were to go back to school, what will happen if one student or staff member is asymptomatic and this caused a high-risk student to get sick? And yes, kids get sick too. What happens if a teacher gets sick? We have very few substitutes to cover. What happens if two teachers get sick? Right now, our numbers are so high, returning to campus is not a good idea. We must have the reduced numbers and then determine when school can resume the best and in the best way to ensure everybody's safety. There are some students who need access to schools, and those arrangements have been made. However, opening schools to everyone needs to be addressed when numbers are under control and it is safe to do so. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Linda Strang. Mrs. Strang?
I think we're having a special education reunion here. Okay, I'm the special education teacher at Foothill. And my school serves students that are spread apart. There's no public transportation, and many students cannot walk to school or ride a bike to school. And in fact, some have an hour car ride just to get to school. The second challenge of living in the Foothills is the internet. Many of my students have little to no internet, even with the district-provided booster. This equates limited interaction with teachers. Some of my students live in families with one car that's used to take a parent to work, or they have no money for gas. Couple this transportation issue with the lack of internet services, and you have a recipe for educational inequities. In some cases, Marysville is asking parents to drive for an hour to school, then drive back home, just to turn around 2.5 hours later to go pick up their child and drive back home. That's 4 hours of driving, if they can afford the gas and someone's at home that can do all that driving. Several of my students' parents have told me that even though distance learning is not going well, they have no choice but to remain in that third cohort, that's cohort C, when schools reopen due to the lack of transportation. And that, my friends, is denying an equitable education to the very students who need to be in school. I know running a school district during a pandemic is uncharted territory. However, I'm requesting that you be creative in finding a way to provide an equitable education for the students in the Foothills. Thank you.
Great. Next, we have Angela Spiegel. Angela?
Sorry, I got a little distracted. As many of you know, I have dedicated nearly 20 years of my life and my teaching career to the Academic Decathlon program of Marysville High School and the Yuba County Office of Education. As some of you might recall, in July, the Yuba County Office of Ed decided to cancel Academic Decathlon for at least this year. To say I was shocked and deeply saddened by the news would be an immense understatement. When I informed the team that Acadeca was being canceled, they asked if they could try to save it. A former team captain spearheaded a campaign that included decathletes, parents, and community members, including my own parents. Current and former decathletes submitted dozens of heartfelt, passionate testimonials to save their team, a team they fervently view as a crucial part of their lives. For many students, the second family taught them self-confidence, resilience, self-esteem, focus, leadership, and commitment. For some of them, Acadeca has been the only real family they've ever known. And for a few, this second family has saved their lives quite literally. Considering the extraordinary benefits of Academic Decathlon, benefits that are only made all the more important and critical in nature during this pandemic and distance learning situation, I can honestly say that this is the worst possible time to cancel this program, even if it's only for a year. When I was told the Yuba County Office of Ed would be canceling Acadeca, I heard nothing in that call forbidding us from finding other means to make our team happen. So after realizing my team did in fact want to continue on, we set about trying to find the means to make that happen. Fortunately, Rocco Greco said that Ed Services would be willing to house Acadeca for this year, and we have the funds to sustain ourselves for this year. And we have 11 dedicated individuals who want to make a go of online Acadeca in the midst of a pandemic and distance learning. Despite looming consequences for speaking tonight, I feel like I have no choice but to do so. As I'm sure you'll understand, my parents raised me to speak up and fight for what is right and to lend my voice to those who either did not have a voice or need a little louder voice. That instilled value is one of the many reasons I became a teacher and the major impetus for why I returned to my hometown to do so. Although I'm being told to silence my voice, I feel like I have no choice but to honor the spirit and commitment of my decathletes and reach out to you to champion their cause. Please help us convince the Yuba County Office of Ed to give us the green light with CAD to be a team this year. Help them take Ed Services up on their generous offer. Let them work with Ed Services, cheer them on from the sidelines, let them carry the torch, let them make you proud, for I guarantee you that they will. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have correspondence to the district. It'll be a 3-minute presentation followed by a board discussion. Number one, correspondence to the district dated 12-2-20 from Mr. Marcus Hamilton regarding distance learning. This is an informational item only. Mr. Hamilton, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you. I'd like to take this opportunity just to say thank you for allowing me to speak to you this evening. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Marcus Hamilton. I am a parent, an educator, and a member of this community. My children have been part of this district for more than 16 years. I am now with my third and final daughter attempting to go through high school for the third time. This distance learning is not working. It has become apparent to me that our students are failing in numbers that are just staggering and matter-of-factly unbelievable to even imagine. With that said, I believe that something needs to change. And I believe that as parents, we should be the ones driving that change. And with that in mind, I went ahead and took the initiative to start a parent group online, which as of last week has surpassed more than 200 members of concerned parents. Tonight, I want to talk about things that are just addressing high school parents at this point, as that was where the majority of our membership has come from. The first part of that has to do with this block schedule. It is my understanding that the block schedule was implemented as the hopeful and initial reopening plan included a block schedule, and they wanted to get the students necessary and used to that kind of thing. The reality is it's not working. There's too much downtime in classes. There is too much time in between classes where our students are becoming distracted by alternate means of entertainment. Now, I have spoken with multiple teachers at the high school, and they have informed me that when and if school is to return with this current block schedule, then add on to the fact that you'll have students on campus only 2 days a week, that for those students that are not on campus, while they may be able to watch the class, they will not be able to interact with the teachers, and I find that completely and totally irresponsible. We have to move to a more traditional schedule. I have reached out to multiple school districts around Northern California and have found that many of them are using a minimum day schedule, allowing their students to see each teacher every single day. I do not understand why Marysville has not chosen to follow such an example where our students get more hands-on time with their teachers. Having an hour and 20 minutes where our teachers have the opportunity to teach to our kids, but are only using half of that time to do so, makes the rest of the time irrelevant in the eyes of our students. I'm not trying to harp on anybody here. I know this is a difficult situation. But the reality is I had my daughter do me a favor, and she tracked her class time. And over the course of 2 weeks, she only spent on average 15 to 20 minutes in class with a teacher. That leads to the next part, student communication. Last month, my daughter received 150 emails over the course of 15 instructional days. Hearing from other parents in our group, that number easily exceeded 200. Many of these emails are part of the Google Classroom notification when assignments are input into the classroom. This is all well and good, but unfortunately, our teachers are using their personal time in the evenings and on the weekends to assign work. I hate the fact that our teachers have to do this, but even more so, they're now assigning work when our students aren't paying attention to what's going on in their classrooms. And if students are getting assignments at midnight, they don't get it. And see that I'm out of time, so I appreciate you guys. You guys have my notes, and I'll be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hamilton. Board members, do you have any questions or comments? Not hearing any. Thank you very much, Mr. Hamilton, for your presentation. Superintendent's report. Mr. Cena.
First of all, I too would like to welcome our new board members formally, publicly, from trustee area number 2, Gary Criddle. Welcome. Trustee area 3, Allison Hasty. Hello. And trustee area 4, Doug Criddle. Welcome and thank you for your service and your leadership. Also, just some business here with the board. First of all, communication yesterday about a special board meeting on January 12th that we hope all board members can attend. That would start at 4:30. And then in preparation for that special board meeting, which is really a study session about the energy efficiency plan and improvement plan by SiteLogic, that in preparation for that on January 5th, it would be a staff meeting where staff from MJUSD and SiteLogic and also ISOM advisors with the financing piece and some of the other elements will meet to develop a plan to bring to the board for the board study session. So yesterday there was an invitation out. We can have up to 3 board members attend that. We've had 2, Trustee Davis and Trustee Rasmussen have volunteered so far. We have another board member that's interested. Thank you for letting me know. That would be at 10 a.m. on January 5th. Also, just a reminder for board members, please, tomorrow morning between 6:30 and 11:30, anytime during that time, please see Lisa Mejia to sign the school board authorization form. And also with that, to sign the J13A waiver form for the days that students, the school closures in September for schools in the foothills. Together, serving every student every day in every way. Today is the 277th day since our last day of traditional school, which was March 13th. It's all due to the COVID-13. Thank you for all that you are doing, everyone, no matter your role or as a stakeholder or an employee of the district, that what you've done to help us slow the spread of COVID-19, ensure the health and safety of students and staff, maintain relationships, and facilitate learning. And also, thank you for what you're doing to help us provide an instructional program that's seamless, flexible, and that maintains relationships. Throughout this journey, those have been our guiding goals and purposes for doing what we're doing. And our compass all along this journey has been the public health guidance. And in looking at transitioning from distance learning to blended learning, the advice, public health advice, is to be prudent, patient, rational, and measured. On October 27th, our board voted to reopen elementary schools, preschool through first grade, beginning November 12th, and secondary schools on January 5th. On November 16th, Dr. Liu's direction, we paused that phase in due to the transmission and hospital rates of COVID-19. On December 4th, we had an emergency meeting, and the board voted to revert to distance learning until the end of this week, till December 18th, due to increased transmission and hospitalization rates and that our ICU, shortage of ICU beds and nursing services. Tonight, in our new business of our board agenda tonight, two of the three items relate to the in-person instruction. First, our new board will ratify the December 4th decision to revert to distance learning in all grade levels through this upcoming Friday. The reason is twofold. Number one is that was an emergency meeting, and we have an emergency meeting, and in our next regularly scheduled meeting, we need to ratify that vote. And second of all, we have three new board members, and it's an opportunity for them to have a voice. The second item, board will discuss and determine parameters for opening schools after winter break. Our plan was led to and was up beginning on January 5th. The key here, the purpose of that discussion really is so that we're all on the same page in terms of what is it, what criteria, what parameters are we using for reopening schools when we come back from winter break. Also tonight, there's our first interim report, which Assistant Superintendent of Business Services Penny Lossing has created specific and clear presentation with the building blocks of the budget, and so that we can all understand the elements and the pieces and the requirements of the budget, so we all can make decisions so that we can best utilize the resources so that together we can serve every student every day in every way. And also, I want to wish everybody a healthy and happy Christmas. It's going to be different than any Christmas we've ever had, but we can still be grateful, and we can have hope for the future for 2021. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Next, have superintendent approval of the minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 11-10-20. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes from the board meeting of 11-10-20? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Was that Mr. Boom?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. We'll have a roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty? You're muted, Mrs. Hasty.
Well, this says we have to abstain. So
correct.
Correct.
So does it matter?
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Abstain.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Abstain.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 4 yes. Next, we have the minutes from the special board meeting of 11-16-20. Is there any discussion on the board on the minutes from 11-16-20? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve by Randy Davis.
Motion to approve by Mr. Davis. Is there a second? I'll second the motion. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Abstain.
Trustee Hasty?
Abstain.
Trustee Criddle? Gary Criddle?
Gary Criddle, abstain.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Abstain.
Trustee Frank Robert?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries because Mr. Jeff Boom's abstention goes in the favor of the motion. So there would be four yes. Next, we have the minutes from the emergency board meeting of 12-4-20. Is there any discussion regarding those minutes? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second by Randy Davis.
Second by Trustee Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Abstain.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Abstain.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Abstain.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carried. Next, we have the consent agenda. Are there any items that board members would like to have pulled from the consent agenda?
Yeah, I would like, what is it? Personnel services number 7 and business services number 1.
Okay, so
both on page 10.
Personnel services number 7 is on page 10. Is that right, Mr. Boom?
Yeah, and business services number 1, which is also on page 10.
Okay. So we're going to pull item number 7. And we're going to pull business services also on page 10, item number 1.
Right.
Okay. Any other items to be pulled? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve the consent agenda, except the items pulled by Mr. Crawford.
Second.
Is there a second?
Gary Criddle, second.
Second by Gary Criddle. Okay, roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boom?
Yes.
Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Criddle, Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Next we'll go to personnel services, number 7, new position, communication specialist. Mr. Boom?
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to maybe hear a little more about this position. And second of all, this is a position looks like we're going to fund with CARES Act funds and then later bring it back as it relates to the LCAP. I don't think that's a wise expenditure of our funds. excuse me. We have people in curriculum that could do these types of things. Why couldn't this be a shared position by people that are already in student services? You're looking at probably $100,000-$120,000 by the time you pay this position plus benefits. I would rather see us spend money from the LCAP on things like vice principals or something like that. It just seems like we've got so much stuff going out already. We've inundated people. I get complaints all the time about how inundated people are with these emails and stuff. So we're just going to keep throwing out more stuff like this. And I don't see where we're getting our bang for a dollar. So anyways, that's just my 2 cents.
Okay. Mr. Cena?
Well, Mr. Carrion is...
I'm sorry, Mr. Carrion.
Yeah, thank you, President Rasmussen. And it's an opportunity here to to share information regarding the communication specialist as it's been intended to further the district's ability to more effectively and succinctly communicate in an environment where social media and other much greater use platforms are available to our public. Yes, there are staff members who perhaps have the talent and the experience to communicate to the stakeholders and communicate to staff. The intent with this position is to stay abreast of the latest while ensuring that our community hears not only the most valuable key pieces of information that drive what we do and why we do it, but also to provide our stakeholders with positive positives that are happening, while also ensuring that they, in conjunction with the school sites, collaborate on sharing information effectively, succinctly, in an environment where fast-paced information, the latest, it is, to some extent, good, bad, or indifferent, swamping us, but also by effectively utilizing resources that can provide a district such as ours, a medium-sized district, an opportunity to use people, a person who is media savvy, who is well-trained, who has a grasp of the various social media platforms, and can provide assistance to the schools, assistance to the departments, assistance to stakeholders in a way that we could bridge communication highways and ensure that our parents, our staff members are receiving the latest, not necessarily through the old, what I'm going to say, the old structure of an email, but certainly through a much more available platform that we all have or that everybody seems to be using and is much more comfortable with, so that we're not bogging down our email systems, but also given opportunities for people to receive personal information through their choice and access through their choice in the various ways that are available to them, given their preferences. There are times when we are going to make announcements through media releases, opportunities where there may be the use of communication through email, but it's employing someone that has the training, someone that has the dedicated time to do this in a way that other staff members aren't pulled from their other duties. And again, ensure that the district is on the forefront of conveying, communicating, and providing positive information while also keeping stakeholders abreast in all that they need to know. Questions? I know that's an overview of why. Yes, there is a cost to this, as Mr. Bloom indicated, and probably in a neighborhood with salary and benefits of $110,000 to $120,000, given the expectation that someone is going to be well-seasoned, experienced, and trained to do the job effectively, and to communicate and collaborate with each of the departments, to collaborate with the school sites, so that this person is in the know of what's happening at the school sites in order to share positive and timely information to all of our stakeholders.
This is Randy Davis, and my concern is that we are adding a position to with an emergency area record. So my concern is if this is to be the voice of the district to the public and others, how have you done the work that it usually takes to integrate a position of this caliber? Already we have multitudes of sources of communication, and you're adding another voice to that. And so the concern I have is the effectiveness of adding a position after everything's left the gate. It does not appear to be an integrated position. It appears to be an add-on position. And most of the complaints we're hearing from the public is there's too much or not enough information. So my concern is for $120-something thousand, I'm hoping we can do better than that. Thank you.
I had a quick question. For that amount of money, is that in line with what other positions that are similar around the state?
And actually, it is. It depends on the classification. This position would be classified as a classified position, an hourly position, and ultimately working 260 days a week, entitled to, of course, paid vacation and holidays, and established on a supervisory scale. And so it ranges anywhere from 70 to about 110 salary and benefits commensurate with that and statutory benefits. So depending on where that prospective candidate falls on the wage scale, yes, it is competitive, and it's also commensurate with like positions in medium-sized business.
You had mentioned that this person would be traveling from site to site. So have you factored in the transportation costs to go in with that?
There needs to be an expense budget. Obviously, an expense that goes with that, including technical devices and a budget for telephones and certainly a mileage factor. That's a range of salary benefits and statutory costs, depending on where that person falls on the wage scale. But I would certainly, although not delineated here, would certainly recommend that an expense budget would be included.
I agree that this needs to serve the community, but I'm still trying to wrap my brain around this and how does it serve our students. So I'm just still a little bit confused.
The rationale for this position and the reason for using CARES money is because we're in a pandemic, and also like with the power shutdowns and the current regional stay at home order, we've experienced over the last 277 days that news happens and it happens fast. I mean, there's information today, public health guidance that went out. And also we need to revise our reopening plan already that we can't stay on top of. And so what brings it here and what creates a window is having someone who's at the ready, who's, it's not an add-on, it would be embedded in what already exists. So it wouldn't be necessarily looking at a new voice. It would be anticipating as information is going to happen, that we're anticipating it, we're moving, and we're preparing, and then we're sending. So that, as guidance changes, as information, we can just take the last month or two and look at how many zigs and zags there've been, and that's just on that level of keeping people informed about what's happening with COVID-19. And then in addition, while distance learning is taking place, people are cut off. They're shut off from what's happening. Like for instance, we have programs like the Yuba Water Agency. We talked some about that earlier. There was time to talk and share what's happening with that. And there's been a lot of progress with that program and others, and what teachers are doing with distance learning, and what they're revolutionizing the whole process and teaching and learning, and things are going on. It's getting out and sharing what's happening, in our district that we're not getting out. And so it's to help with the immediate and the safety and the getting communication out to people and then having a social media presence so that we can help educate and answer questions and get information. And it's a support to the systems that are in place, making it stronger, more efficient, and then expanding and having our stakeholders understand, you know, what terrific things are happening. And so those are the purposes. You know, districts of our size have a person who is assigned to that position or that role. And so it would improve all of our communication to stakeholders.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Other comments, questions? I was just going to throw out there too, like what we have going with SiteLogic and the expansion at Avoga, the things that the COVID is so intense and so immediate and so keep your eye on the ball that we're those other pieces, people, it's not as fluid as like when we're in a regular traditional school year. And so it's a way to help people be more aware and understand and see what's happening. Okay. Any other comments?
Are you going to fly that position or do you already have somebody picked for it? Are you going to advertise it?
Mr. Carrion?
Yes, absolutely. The expectation, if approved, we would, in fact, cast a wide net and hope to find the very best person available.
I'm sorry, I have one more question. If it is that we're using CARES Act funds, loss mitigation funds here to support that, in essence, we do have this person. Is that budgeted for a year? Is that what we're looking at, Gary?
Yeah, it would be, it'd be as far as the funds exist, which yes, that's where we are right now. We don't know, you know, necessarily projecting with those types of monies for the coronavirus assistance. And so this would be seen or viewed as that this is to help during this time to provide assistance that as, you experience yourselves, that everybody's role and everybody's pull is harder. And so this is a way to help distribute or help lift that. And then, you know, as Trustee Boom said, you know, when these types of monies subside and it's, you know, is this an expense that would continue on or not? You know, at this time it's, hey, to help with the current situation and to help us communicate, help us better serve and, you know, in the process, build our capacity so that, and that's across the board. As Ms. Lossing will share tonight, there's some good news with the budget, and then there's some, you know, not so good. And so down in the future, it's hard to see. But the idea here is that this is to help aid during this pandemic.
Okay.
It's a tool to help.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
So are we saying then we would possibly review this position at the end of the year to see if it's doing what we're hoping it's doing?
Well, it certainly would be prudent to evaluate the effectiveness and the value that we're getting from it, and also to weigh it in comparison to resources that are available to sustain the position out into the future years.
I'm sorry. Well, how long was the contract for that you're projecting for this person? How many days?
It's 260 day calendar.
260?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And the second question is this funding dependent?
Funding dependent? It certainly
What I'm saying is, you're saying you are funding it from the CARES funding, and that if the future there's no CARES funding, this position would go away. Is that the position we are talking about?
We're talking about evaluating the value and the effectiveness of the position to make a determination as to whether or not we would seek other funding sources to sustain the position, given the value that it provides to the district.
When would we be making that evaluation?
Well, we would certainly give it time into the, I would project, that into the towards the end of the year, and then as budgets continue to be built and other available resources that come our way to be considered to at least try and sustain the position through a year before making a final determination.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is it is the contract. If it's for 260 days, well, here we are in the middle of our 2021 budget year. That means that position would be guaranteed through sometime in the middle of the next budget year, if I'm understanding.
The designation of a 260-day position is not a commitment to a 260-day contract. It's simply a classification for the employee and the employment classification of a 260-day employee. It does not mean that there is a definitive obligation to employ somebody for 260 days. It's just simply a classification given to that employee.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions or comments? If not, I will entertain a motion.
Were we considering, Mr. Boom, weren't you considering number one, two? Or are we going to do motions separately? How are we working it?
We're doing them individually.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, so is there a motion regarding the communication specialist? So I will make a motion to approve the communication specialist position. Is there a second? No second. Motion dies for lack of a second. Okay, business services. Number one, legal counsel to retain and fund expert consultant services for proposed energy efficiency project. Mr. Boom?
Yeah, I would just like to get a little more clarification on this, if Penny doesn't mind going into it a little bit more and exactly what this is going to encompass and why we have the attorney doing the agreements instead of running those through business services.
Absolutely. I'm happy to answer the questions, Trustee Boom, and welcome to our new board members. It's good to see you tonight, and hello to everyone else and Superintendent Cena as well. This particular contract is for independent experts to help us evaluate the proposed set of energy measures regarding the scope of the project. And why we need this is because there's government code that allows for sole source energy efficiency projects. And so, as you will recall, we have SiteLogic developing our energy efficiency plan. And it's a huge scope because we need so much of it in this district. And because of that, they're developing the specs, the specifications, and they're also pricing it. So, and then we negotiate the contract with them. And so in collaboration with our legal counsel, who will be, who is in working with the contract negotiation now, having additional energy experts to validate that the district is getting the best deal for this potentially $26 million project is deemed to be necessary. And that's pretty much why. So that we can get the maximum value. Because we don't have, it's not a typical, a separate entity like an architect or someone developing the specs and then it being bid out and other people having the opportunity. With energy efficiency projects, they're built based on the company that's going to provide the services. And it just so happens that there probably aren't a lot that can do the particular same types of solar and HVAC that this company can do. So as they're building the plan and the specifications, we want to have another expert validate that we are getting the best value for this project. And it's so big, $26 million, that we felt it appropriate. And this would be a not to exceed amount. And it could be that we use substantially less of the experts. But as we go through and we're trying to get this done timely with the goal that we can, you know, work next summer on the Lyndhurst High School HVAC, potential catastrophic failure at any time. That's part of this project. So there's a timeliness as well.
Penny, that $31,000 pays for all the experts. It's not just what the legal, the attorneys are charging us look into it.
No, it is a proposal from an independent expert in energy efficiency projects. And we did it through our legal counsel so that we can have the information and be able to use it for the negotiations without the independent experts' information being public. So see, it goes through the attorney so that we have that benefit for negotiating the contract with the energy efficiency company.
Penny, how many sites are there here? Is this just one site?
No, it's throughout the entire district. It's all of our schools.
Okay, so every school site is the $26 million.
Right.
Okay, I'm sorry, I got a lot of questions, guys.
So. No, and that's what our board workshop will be about on the 12th, and then that MJUSD staff and the SiteLogic staff will come together on the 5th to determine any outstanding questions before they bring forward the project on the 12th as a board workshop to make everybody up to speed on what we're attempting.
Okay, thank you.
It's a wonderful, this district, we don't have any solar. It's really, and then their ability to provide back when we have real briefly some very serious need, like I said, potential catastrophic failure at Lyndhurst High School, they're going to be able to encompass that into the energy efficiency project. And then we have Foothill School with those power shutoffs and no windows, the way that site is built, and they have a potential for generating the energy with batteries or something. They've got a solution built specifically for that. But we would want to have some independent experts to review everything and have that to ensure that the district's protected.
Well, the other question I have, and this is Randy Davis, is the $31,000 you have stated here, is that a part of the liability when you have a single source contract?
Well, I think that it helps ensure that the district's getting the absolute best deal that we can get by having someone review the contract, the parameters. And if you'd like, Bob Thurbin could probably speak to. He works with Kingsley Bogart and is familiar with these with this particular independent expert company.
So how do we come up with the 31,000 figure?
Mr. Thurbin, would you like to speak to that?
Yes, I would, Penny. Thank you very much. Good evening, members of the Board of Trustees. It's a flat rate proposal, but it's a capped rate proposal. We use the experts to evaluate the credibility of the engineering calculations and the overall design. We've learned over time when we negotiate these contracts for school districts and represent your interest that occasionally we run into a project where it's potentially underbuilt, and occasionally you run into a project where it's overbuilt. And we have found historically that claims and enforcing guarantees post-construction and post-contract negotiation isn't a real good substitute for doing our due diligence up front. So we have established a practice of using an experienced, credible engineering company who has no interest in the project. In other words, they have not designed it. They don't have any profit to make. And as Penny's correctly pointed out, it's a sole source project, essentially. So the company that's going to pitch this project, this $26 plus million project to you in reasonably short order, is probably going to raise a lot of questions in your mind, and you're going to want to have good data about the credibility of the guarantees that are being made. So we have, like I say, we have historically developed a practice over time of having this independent company look at the engineering calculations, look at the scope of the project, look at the component pieces, and validate the projections of and the, that we turn into guarantees in the contract. They're going to tell you you're going to achieve if you decide to invest your $26 million plus in the project. So I agree with Penny. I think it's essential. And the cost, while $31,000 isn't a small amount of money, but in the overall scope of $26 million project, with what's on the line, with the guarantees, the assurance that we have from an expert who is independent and does not have any input into the design and doesn't stand to profit, benefit, or lose from the design, is something that aids us greatly as we negotiate and develop the guarantees that your vendor is going to come talk to you about approving.
Penny, how many
Thank
sites
you very
do we
much.
Have this is covering?
Well, we have solar on some, not all of them, but there is, we have, one of the specifications we asked was that it touch every single site. Some form of energy efficiency upgrades will occur at every single site. Some will have solar. They'll have the thermostat replacements and lighting upgrades. Then there's the HVAC pieces as well. And they've also, you know, we told them what we needed as far as the Lyndhurst High School, you know, potential catastrophic failure, and then our Foothill School, and the fact that we need to be able to power that school with all of these public service power shutoffs that are occurring. And they are working on solutions, and from what we've seen so far, very good solutions for both of those in particular that is encompassed and will be paid for from the savings that in utilities that, like any typical energy efficiency project does, will pay for itself.
Totally agree. Thank you. I was just kind of looking at from a business standpoint, forgive me. If you've got, are we talking over 20 sites?
Right.
26?
26 sites.
Okay. So divided by 26, my calculation is about $1,220 bucks. Doesn't sound like a bad investment, really, to get an expert out there to tell us that we're doing the right thing. So that's what I wanted to find out where we're at. I mean, that right there makes a little more sense. And I agree with Jeff. When I saw this here, I had my yellow Sharpie out. And I just, like I said, I asked a lot of questions. So, so we're about $1,200 bucks, give or take, for some solid legal advice as we just heard. So thank you.
Well, the other question I have for you, Penny, is this whole business. The reason why, at least what I understand, that the Foothills project failed was because of PG&E. Is this a part of this discussion?
They SiteLogic is aware of that, Mr. Davis, and they are working around that. A viable solution.
Penny, I can also help answer that question.
Thank you, Mr. Barnett.
You're welcome. This is Travis Barnett, Director of Buildings and Grounds. Randy, you're correct. In the beginning of this project, when we started looking into the solar over at the Foothill Schools, backup generators, tying into the system and the grid with PG&E at that time, we were denied and the cost was too expensive. During this project, working with SiteLogic and Paul Gant's office and everyone else. We're now working with PG&E ahead of time. So we're preemptively working with them to get permits signed before time, which you guys have seen previous board meeting. That way, when we're moving forward with PG&E to develop this project, we have an all-encompassing cost. So, but you're correct, the last project wasn't viable, but with these new engineering, we're able to develop a new hybrid system at the Foothill, which is going to be more advantageous for the residents of the community up there.
Thank you very much, Travis. Appreciate it.
So, Penny, if this item is approved tonight, are these experts going to be on board for the January 5th study session and then the January 12th special board meeting? Because it seems to me that's when SiteLogic is going to be giving their presentation. So are these experts going to be a part of that to see if SiteLogic is telling us the truth or not?
Mr. Thurbin?
Yes, Penny and members of the board, yes. In fact, the data that we have to date and the portions of the proposals and the contracts and the specifications and the projections we have to date have already been packaged up, and I've delivered them to the expert company with directions that they're to hold until we get approval from the board, hoping that we get approval tonight. And I've had some preliminary discussion with them, and we've walked through some of the parameters. So short answer, which I'm making longer than necessary, is yes, they're on board, and you approve it tonight. They will be ramping up their work tomorrow, and I got a meeting, telephone meeting scheduled with them tomorrow to let them know if they're to start working, and then we're going to establish a schedule for their work product.
But I think the question was whether they'll be in the room on January 5th and January 12th, which I don't believe they will be. Is that they'll be working on this? They're like doing an investigation or a study. They won't be sitting in a room listening to a presentation. Is that correct?
Yes, that's generally how we utilize them. They don't listen to the presentation. The presentation is your vendor's pitch to you. We have the background and the back data in the background, much of it we will have shared in advance with the board. And it's possible if the board wants them to be there or to at least listen, it's possible we could do that. I'd have to think about whether or not that's a good idea at that particular point in time to have them actually present in that meeting, but it's not beyond the possibility if the board has a preference.
We're kind of thinking back about what Trustee Doug Criddle was saying, it sounds like this is some insurance that the district is being assured that what SiteLogic is telling us is accurate. Is that
Yes, it's an independent, yeah, it's an independent set of eyes of qualified engineers with no investment. They get nothing from this except their fees that are capped to tell us whether or not the engineering as proposed, the scope is your best value, what the alternatives are, and whether or not the things we're going to write in the contract as performance guarantees, whether or not the project as designed is going to meet those for the life of the project, meet the guarantees, or is there some shortage? Is it going to fall short, or is it being overbuilt, for example? So that's the information we're going to get.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
I'd like to make a motion to approve.
Okay. I wasn't sure who the first one was.
Gary Criddle.
Gary Criddle. Thank you. And then Doug Criddle. And so motion was Trustee Gary Criddle. And we had a second?
Yes, Randy Davis.
Okay. Trustee Davis, second. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boone? Yes?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries.
Hey, Randy, can I interrupt you for 1 second? I'm gonna take off. I'm not feeling well. I just got out, like you guys know, about 1 o'clock out of the hospital today. So I'm not feeling real well right now. So good night to everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Okay. Now we have new business, student services 2021. Reverting all elementary grade levels to distance learning. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board ratify the 12-4-20 emergency meeting decision that all elementary school grade levels, including preschool, revert to distance learning beginning 12-7-20 through 12-18-20. Except as noted in the recommendation of staff, and to have special populations reevaluated for services. Mr. Cena, I know you talked a little about that earlier, but.
Yes. As front loaded earlier, this is for two reasons. We're working through this process. One is on December 4th, that meeting was an emergency meeting. And so by definition, at the next regularly scheduled meeting of the board is to ratify that decision. And then in addition, in this case, we have three new board members. So I ran through a lot of the history or the background earlier, and namely to say that the board had voted on October 27th to start to phase in elementary schools on November 12th. And then, between November 12th and November 16th, the hospitalization and transmission rates had increased at such a rate that Dr. Liu had directed that all elementary schools in the Yuba-Sutter area pause until the curve reflattens. And so we met on the 4th, and the board approved this motion. And so we'd be looking for the board tonight to ratify that decision, which actually runs until this Friday, where basically all grade levels are at reverting back to distance learning. And then we're continuing to serve the students that are the most at risk.
Any questions or comments from board members? If not, then I will make a motion. I move the board ratify the 12-4-20 emergency meeting decision that all elementary school grade levels, including preschool, revert to distance learning beginning 12-7-20 through 12-18-20, except as noted in the recommendation of staff, and have special populations reevaluated for services. Is there a second?
Second by Randy Davis.
Second by Mr. Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boom is absent. Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
No.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries. Item number two, the 2020 MJUSD proposed pandemic school reopening plan. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve rephasing in elementary grade levels when public health officials permit schools to resume in-person blended instruction and to open secondary schools beginning 2/16/21. Mr. Cena?
Yes, and earlier shared that today is the 277th day since our last day of traditional school. And the goal since then has been to provide in-person instruction as much aligned to that traditional schedule as we could, with it being healthy and safe. And so on this journey, guidance has been our compass. And so October 27th, when the board voted that we start to phase in elementary schools, and then the other part of that is that we would start or open secondary schools on January 5th. As we move toward the end of the first semester, we can see that actually since December 4th, the transmission and hospitalization rates have worsened, and to the point where we're now on a regional stay-at-home order. And the driving measure by that are the number of cases. We all see, I think earlier there was a speaker that said there were 567 cases in Yuba and Sutter counties over the last 3 days. There was 201 last night. The ICU units, which is the measure throughout the state, the ICU in Yuba and Sutter is Adventist Health is at or near capacity. And so that situation is worse, and due to the surge, the initial surge on December 4th was due to Halloween. And now we have a surge, we have Thanksgiving, we have a second surge on top of that initial surge. And what health guidance says is that it takes 2 weeks after an event, a major event, that you see the number of cases increase. And then 2 weeks after that, the hospitalizations increase. And then 2 weeks after that is the ICU. And so we are hitting, we've had the Halloween, we're getting into the Thanksgiving, and then we see that we have Christmas and New Year's. And so what this purpose is to have a discussion, because our stakeholders, everybody, whether staff members, students, parents, community, you know, what are we looking at, or what criteria are we using for, you know, when we can look at in-person instruction. And so I'll just throw out there, first of all, because we have two things. One is we do have, have a copy of the calendar, school calendar up here soon. But before that, looking at, if we look at that equation or that pattern, that it's realistic to see that if January 1st is going to be a time when people are going to be advised, recommended to stay home, but no matter what, people will gather, then you look at, okay, it'll be 2 weeks after that would be the middle of January, which is when, you know, some forecasters say that that's when it could peak. and that would be with the numbers followed by the hospitalizations and the ICU. So what would happen at the end of that time, 2 weeks into January, is that there may be another 3 week, you know, if you think in terms, okay, there's a surge after New Year's Day, then 3 weeks after that with a regional home order, that would put us at the February 16th date. Also, the February 16th date is thrown out there as an idea, because for the high schools, secondary schools, particularly high schools, live on checkpoints, progress reports, which is exactly that timing. The progress report would end just before that February break for President's Day. You know that for the first time ever, we only have a 2 week winter break. And so that third week, for this year was placed on between the president's, holidays. And so that would put it at the 16th. So it's a setting spot because it, reflects the peak. If the curve, the surge, the New Year surge hits, and when, you could start looking at the recoil, as well as the progress report, as well as it's the day coming out of that president's, I don't know if we have a name for it yet, but it's like that president's break. And so also the thinking is that, consistent with the guidance, that we've experienced, is that the elementary schools, public health is going to approve elementary schools to resume rephasing or continuing the phase in before secondary schools because of the science sharing that the youngest kids have fewer ACE receptors. The science says that they don't pass the virus on to each other, whereas the older kids who have more ACE receptors, they do. And so the science and the data both show that happens. So that's the basis for why public health allows elementary schools to have waivers. Then they allow elementary schools to open during the red tier, but before secondary schools. And then when they pause, when we pause the elementary schools, public health direction around Yuba Center area actually reverted the secondary schools to distance learning. So the idea here is to have a discussion in terms of if we want to look at some dates. I think that secondary schools, particularly the high schools, would like to have a target date that they can kind of focus on, or a set of guiding principles that, hey, use this criteria or, this advice to, to open schools so that all of us have a working idea of how we're going to open, or look at resuming in-person instruction. And then, with this, as was shared at the December 4th meeting, that, while we're in distance learning, that we're still serving the hardest or the most at-risk students. That's a lot, throwing a lot out there. But I think that we had said it, we're phasing in and we start January 5th. That doesn't seem realistic or what's going to happen. So people want to know, okay, well now what's next? And that's where we come up with our approach.
Questions or comments, board members?
Yeah, Gary, just to reiterate then, you're saying, you're predicting positively that seniors or high school kids won't be back January 5th? Is that it? You want to extend that, or? Just a clarification.
Yeah, Frank, I think that's not going to be, this particular order goes till New Year's. The regional stay-at-home order goes to New Year's. And I don't know, we've got a lot of minds here. When we're looking at 567 positive cases, and we're in the purple tier, and we're averaging, I don't know, in 3 days, that's almost 200 cases a day. We're deep purple. 7 cases a day is still purple. So we're 30 times above the where we would be going into a red tier.
You're talking about starting high schools up in the middle of February.
I'm saying let's move our marker date from January 5th, which is not realistic, and move our marker date to February 16th, and which may or may not be realistic, but it gives time. I appreciate your patience. It's just today we sent out that public health guidance about youth sports and adult athletic activities. And the reason I bring it up as an example is in that they said, well, there'll be no competitive sports till January 25th. But what they said is we're constantly going to monitor and we're going to constantly communicate to let you know, what's happening. And now they very well may move that marker, another day, but at least they've given the whole state a date that people can look at and say, all right, well, we know it's not going to happen until at least January 25th, but we also know information is going to be coming to let us know where we move it. And
are our kids practicing sports now?
No.
Okay.
No. In fact, that guidance today was really helpful because particularly for sports and athletics, we've been trying to speak four languages at the same time. And now what this guidance does is it says, all right, what a purple tier, what you can do in a purple tier and in a red tier and an orange tier, which sports you can't. And then what activities you can do within those sports in each and why. So I really encourage people to take a look at that. And they transcend the protocols, in other, areas. So yeah, no.
My concern is, Gary, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. We've already relinquished our elementary waiver. I'm not saying we did that prematurely, and I respect the decision. But now, unilaterally, we're just putting out a figure of the middle of February that's going to be implanted in our parents and our kids' heads and everything. And what if things change the other way? Well, we've already committed to that. We've lost our ability to have our waiver because we relinquished that. And now we're committing to the middle of February when because things change. And I agree with you that it's cases are raising rapidly. Do we really want to commit to middle of February? Is that what you're asking?
Well, Frank, one of the things I agree. It seems very difficult when we start throwing out dates.
Yeah.
And it seems like we're definitely driven by the recommendations from the public health officer. And it seems like the more dates we throw out, people get excited and.
Exactly.
My second grade grandson made it all the way up till Sunday and then we had to close it and he never got to attend school. So I think that is heartbreaking for families. And I think the hard thing is we don't have a clue of when we're going to be able to get in-person instruction again. Because it's all regulated by what our counties are doing. So it seems to me, I think instead of picking a date, if we just, you know, we get updates from Dr. Liu every week of what the transition or what the effective rate is. And essentially, she's the one that's going to tell us when we can open and when we can't. I certainly think in our previous MOU that we have with teachers, there's X amount of days once we decide we're going to go back to in-person school that we have to give them to be prepared. So I agree with you. It seems like always putting dates out there is detrimental to our families.
Thank you. I agree
with you, Randy and Frank. I really feel that if the situation improves faster, we can open faster. And people need to understand that we are complying with health officials and state regulation. And I agree, putting on a date there is absolutely detrimental. People need to be watching what's going on with the Yuba County, Sutter County precautions on the COVID. It's frustrating for everybody to get geared up for a date and then, oh my God, we had a problem. So, you know, my recommendation to this resolution is when we have firm health advice from the county, the state, whatever it is, we will open within 7 days of that notice. I think that's much more constructive for everybody concerned. Thank you.
Any other comments from board members?
Yeah, I had just a quick question. Sorry. Now, I'm just a little unclear. So that date, which I agree with everybody, I share the same sentiment on that. On the 16th of February, do we roll out one grade per week? Is that the protocol?
The idea with the 16th is that the secondary schools would start on the 16th, that would mean that the elementary schools would have started sooner.
Correct.
And our plan was that we would start grades 6 through 12 at the same time.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah. It's phasing in, public health guidance was to phase in slow. And so we were layering that, we're phasing that in. So you're right. At the early grades, we would continue our phasing in. And when we did that, when we got the word go, we could start with second grade. Because that's exactly where we were when we started. We'd go second grade. The original idea was we would go a grade level for each of the elementary schools, and then we would start the secondary schools all at the same time. And so hopefully that answers it.
Yes. Thank you, Gary.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Any other comments or questions? If not, I would like to propose a motion.
One point earlier, I just wanted to clarify was Trustee Davis shared 7 days in our MOU with distance learning, Mr. Carrion, it's 10 days. Is that correct? Yeah. So the other piece of this is it's such an inexact science and we're flying. I just wanted to share that there's already been an agreement that it would be at least 10 days before we actually started, so that staff would be able to prepare. That's an MOU.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? So I'm going to make a motion. I move the board approve rephasing in elementary grade levels and open secondary schools when public health officials permit schools to resume in-person blended instruction and to continue providing services to the district's special population.
Second. I second it.
Okay, so motion by Rasmussen. There was a second by Mrs. Hasty. Okay, roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boom is absent. Trustee Hasty?
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
No.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries. Okay, business services. The 2020-21 first interim financial report. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the 2020-21 first interim financial report for the period ending 10/31/20. Mrs. Lossing?
Yes, good evening again. I have a PowerPoint presentation that Brian Williams will put up for us. It's easier to digest this very exciting budget report. There we go. Thank you, Mr. Williams. And if you'd go ahead and advance slide, please. We'll get right into it. Here's the agenda, the different areas that we'll cover to make sure we talk about everything that we need to give you the full picture of our first interim budget report. Next slide, please. Okay, this is, you'll get used to seeing this for our new board members. We'll use this particular LCAP budget cycle flowchart to help us when we have budget reports and when we adopt the budget and when we have our unaudited actuals, so that we're aware what numbers this particular report is looking at. And as you can see, we start the year, it's the same as the school year, July 1st through June 30. We adopted our budget in June, that's effective July 1st. We have the three blue circles indicate the current year, as you can see by the legend at the top left of the screen, 2021. And so we the first set of numbers was our adopted budget, effective July 1, and now we're looking at the first interim report. We take a picture as of October 31st. Our fiscal department makes all the adjustments, and we present it to you in December every year. So that's the we are here. So we're going to be comparing what the board approved as an adopted budget for this school year compared to where we are now with the current budget adjustments. The other green circles indicate when we start looking at next year. So in January 2021, the governor always brings out his budget proposal for the next fiscal year, starting July 1st again in 2021. And then we go over and we'll see another interim report in March. And then we go and we finish up developing the budget for the following year. You'll notice that we have one outlier at the top on the right, and that's because we adopted this year's budget in June, and then the fiscal department spends the summer, and they close the books on last year. And so in September, we go ahead and the board will approve the unaudited actuals. The budget is always changing. We base it on the best information we know at the time, but that goldenrod color, that's the actuals for the prior year. So unless there's some type of an audit exception, which would be really rare, then those are the actual numbers. But our budget will be changing throughout the year. So next slide, please. Oh, and if you go back real quick, I did note that you see that it says LCAP/budget cycle. That's because we build our budget based on the goals of our LCAP. Our budget is simply all the resources this district has working toward achieving those goals. And so they're always in conjunction, and the budget is based on the, those goals. Next slide. So what's new? We're going to look at the state's big picture and specifically at our school district. Next slide, please. So the Legislative Analyst's Office did a fiscal outlook, and it's recent. It was November 18th, so less than a month ago, for California. And you guys may have heard on the news, the state revenues are up. All different sectors, the high income earners are doing really well. The housing's rebounding. Our tech sector's in good shape. Corporate tax receipts are strong. Our sales tax revenue's higher than was expected. The stock market's up, and that means more capital gains. And then I put the little, the personal income tax note on the right there, because that's what, it's more than two-thirds of our state revenue, and that's why school district revenue can be volatile in the ups and downs, and that's because Prop 98 that requires around 33% of the state's revenue to be apportioned to K-12 and community colleges. So personal income tax, it's easy for some of those real high income earners to leave the state and pay less tax elsewhere. And then as far as corporate, I did notice recently that we were getting somewhat of an exodus. We have Tesla with Elon Musk's Tesla. Hewlett Packard, one of the foundation companies in Silicon Valley. And then recently I heard Oracle as well. They're all moving to Texas. They're leaving California. So the personal income tax of Elon Musk, you know, we may feel that, but that's why I put that there, because it's important to understand that. And that's, but overall state revenues are up, and that's a good thing for all school districts. Next slide, please. And so of course, that's good, but then you have to, the Legislative Analyst Office indicated that while those revenues are up substantially over what they projected this year's revenue would be, because they did that back when COVID-19 was real new, and they thought that it was going to be a huge decrease, right? So the downside to the positive revenue for the state is that over the next 3 years, they're projecting only growth in revenue averaging about 1% a year for the state. But the state's expenses are projected to grow on average around 4.4%. So that means that the state budget could be looking at an operating deficit of around $17 billion if they project it out to, you know, another 3 years from now. We know that's based on assumptions that we know now. We know that'll change, but it is concerning, because the school districts will only do as well as the state does with revenue based on what I mentioned about Prop 98 being tied to that. So next slide. And so now we're going to get look just at the details of our district. A typical first interim would look like this. We've got the last year's books closed, and when that happens, we know actual ending fund balances, so we populate that into the budget. Whatever changes have occurred since we adopted the budget in June, fiscal department identifies and adjusts the budgets, and then fiscal and personnel work together to make sure that our position control is in balance. And that's very important, because over 80% of our overall budget is in our staff. You know, they're the most valuable asset we have, is all of our staff. And so they make sure that's balanced. And then we create a new multi-year projection that will show will indicate the financial position of the district. And of course, Marysville is always positive. So that's when you approve this budget report, you'll be approving the positive financial certification for the district. And what that means is that the district can pay its debts obligations for this year and the two subsequent years. So that's how the multi-year is always the current year and the two out years. Other certifications could be qualified, meaning the district may or may not be able to meet them. And then the horrible negative certification, which is what Sac City Unified is looking at right now. And that means that they will not be able to make their obligations, and they could have a state takeover of that district. But anyway, we are positive, and that's a good thing. Next slide. So what's new in a pandemic year? Well, when we adopted the budget, we did so based on the governor's May revise, which is the last look at this year's budget before the state actually enacts it. And at that time, we were looking at around a 10% reduction because everybody was so certain that the shutdown and the initial pandemic was going to just devastate the state's economy, and you know, nationally and worldwide. But what happened was, when the state budget was actually enacted, that 10% reduction didn't occur. So the LCFF was restored to last year's level of funding. And so we ended up showing from this big decrease, an additional $7.9 million, which is a big increase, but again, it put us back to what last year was. So that's a good thing, even though it's back to last year. Another significant change in the budget from what we adopted to where we are now was that when we adopted the budget, there wasn't a lot of details about the CARES Act funds. So we had $4.7 million on our unrestricted side of the budget. There's just two sides, restricted and unrestricted. And the restricted side, all of those revenues are for very specific purposes and may only be spent for that purpose. And most of those resources will balance themselves. You know, special education program is underfunded, so we contribute from the unrestricted side to balance that because they all have to balance. But so what we saw, what we see in this change from adopted to the first interim was a $4.7 million decrease on the unrestricted side, but then $9.3 million was to be spent, was moved to the restricted side, and that was the amount that we need to spend by December 30th. But then there's actually another about $900,000 that we have until the end of June to spend. So let's keep going, Brian. So here's another picture of the CARES Act funds. And you can see that by far, you know, close to $5 million of that has been spent on facilitating distance learning in, you know, just a variety of forms. Jennifer Pasalia, our director of fiscal, had put together just this $9.3 million. There was about 1,756 rows of expenses. So there were a lot of things that have been paid for, the majority being facilitating distance learning, and then these other state-defined categories. So everything we've spent had to fall within these categories. The next highest was the food program and what we've done with that, maintaining all through summer, you know, all through the pandemic. When we were shut down, we were still serving our community food. And then the other amounts that were for these other particular types of categories of expenses. Administrative expenses were things like radios for teachers and administrators to communicate with each other and so forth. But the next slide has a little bit more detail, kind of still general, but here's some of the examples. We purchased a lot of personal protective equipment, you know, the face mask, the shields, disposable gloves and gowns, the technology, internet connectivity, online textbooks, all of the different distance learning instructional strategies and materials and software. We purchased Chromebooks and Chromebook insurance, devices for both students and staff, some additional, a little bit of additional staffing for our technology department. And then we get into the sanitizing and the hand sanitizers in every room with dispensers, all of the different disinfectants, thermometers, temperature scanners, electrostatic sprayers, also known as our foggers. That's where they put the disinfectant in. And it doesn't even, it's even finer than a mist. It's a fog, and they can do large areas and fully disinfect it for if we have positive cases. And then just in general, too, for deep cleaning. Nutrition services. I know that there was a point when we were serving in the summer that we had to go to the meal kits. Those were, they're more expensive. Not to mention they're not nearly as good as the tasty hot lunches that the nutrition services usually serves and is still serving now. So for a little bit, we had to buy that more expensive food, but we're back now to serving a hot meal every day and supper and a snack at this point. There was some equipment replacements, different supplies, you know, they're serving they're serving curbside. And when we have the students, sometimes the special population students are still in school, they're serving them as well. So two different modes of serving there. Next slide, please. So this moves us right into, and I know I'm going fast, but I figured let's hear all the information and then we'll, whatever questions may come up. State cash deferrals and the impact to our district's cash flow. Next slide. So this you might remember from the August, our August presentation that I talked about the impact of the enacted state budget. So remember when I said that they reinstated that 10% they were going to reduce? Well, they did that, but they didn't have the money or didn't think they had the money to fund it. So they decided they'll say that we're getting the money, but they're going to defer the cash to us. And so what that really means is that it would be like, say you get 12 paychecks a year, you get paid once a year. Your boss says, oh, okay, well, this year, you're still going to get paid the 12 paychecks, but we're really only going to give you 9 of them now. And then you're going to get the other 3 next year. So really on our books, we get the full amount and that's our budget, but the cash flow is being deferred. So we're having to use what cash we have for our operations. So next slide, please. And so this is a little bit of the recent history. And this depicts the statewide amount of deferrals. But what I like about this is that it shows that last year, remember we closed the books and presented it in September. Well, last year they started the deferrals, last fiscal year. So June, we didn't get until July. So really that's not that big a deal. I think it was 2 weeks late. So but it was $9 million. It was apparently our entire apportionment for July. But if we go into the next slide, you can see, and you don't really need to see these numbers here because, again, this is the statewide amount in billions. But what this is showing is that starting in February, 2 months from now, I think it's half, and I've got the percentages. Jennifer put that all together if there's any detailed questions. But so about half of what we typically would get in February for our payment is not going to be paid until next November, almost a year from now. So in 2 months, we're going to lose that. And then in March, they're going to pay that in October. And as you can see, so on. April won't get paid till September. May won't get paid till August. And then they're doing that June to July thing again. So what that all adds up to is this huge $30.5 million of cash deferrals. So we're still going to have all of our same expenses. We're just going to have, and we're still going to get the amount of money in our budget that says our revenue will be for the local control funding formula, but they're going to be deferring paying that money to us in the amount of $30.5 million. So next slide, please. So this is historically how the district has ended our cash. So these were the actual amounts. Remember, once the books are closed, we get our actuals, and the budget's always changing. So what we work on during the year will always change. But the actual ending cash in the general fund in 18-19 was 38.1. And then last year, when we ended June 30th and they closed the books, there was 36.9. And so the projected amount this year is 19.4 because of that $30.5 million deferral. So what this is saying is that we have enough cash, but that it's a substantial decrease. And that also is less than the 2 months of operating expenses that the Governmental Association, GA, FICMAT, or Fiscal Crisis and Management Assistance Team, they state that it's good to have 2 months of operating expenses. And so what 2 months of operating expenses would be, if we have a $144 million general fund, that is the combined unrestricted and restricted. So on average, that would be about $12 million a month in operating expenses. And so you can see that we're below the 2 months of the safety net, but we're well over 1 month. So we're okay, and we didn't have to borrow any money this year. Next slide, please. I just wanted to state, and I stated this in August, that the MJUSD Board of Trustees have been prudent in their fiduciary responsibilities. We have a healthy cash flow, which is good. And that's obviously, who would have thought they would be postponing paying us, you know, $30.5 million this year. But we're, you know, every school district is in the same boat. We're just able to withstand it this year. If we didn't get the deferrals paid back next year, I believe that particular cash flow scenario showed maybe one negative month that we would have a shortfall, that we would have to borrow from another fund or, you know, do a short-term borrowing. But no one is saying that that will occur, but I always have to look at what if, you know, the what if scenarios, and I like to make you aware. So what we're, this year-end fund balance combined is this 44.7, but our year-end cash, you can see that big difference. And then these are projections, and they'll change as our underlying assumptions change. So next slide, please. So as far as the cash goes, it's something that we'll get through this year. Next year, we're going to have to start watching carefully to because there is always a method for short-term borrowing, but we may be able to borrow it from another fund within the district. And what I'm talking about when I say funds is that most businesses have a bank account where they keep their money. School districts have funds at the Yuba County Treasurer's Office. And so our general fund is our main operating fund of the district, and that's what I'm showing you right now. But we have other funds. Cafeteria is a fund. We have deferred maintenance. We have our capital facilities with developer fees and so forth. All of those other funds are for those very specific purposes. You can borrow from them if you need to borrow cash, but it has to be paid back and all that. But anyway, this is the, this, remember I told you we would be looking at comparing from the last official budget report that the board approved, and that was when we adopted the budget in June, compared to this first interim of where we are now. And remember that big change, and we thought we were getting cut the 10%, and then they put it back. This is so unusual. I mean, you never have I mean, this year, you never have fluctuations like this. There could be a change, but $7.9 million, thank you, we need it. And so that puts us back to last year's amount of revenue for LCFF, but that's fine. It's much better than the 94.7. So on the federal revenue, remember we had, this is the unrestricted. You guys probably can't see my cursor, but this is at the top. It's the total revenue unrestricted. Well, this federal revenue, remember we put the CARES Act in the unrestricted side because we didn't know what the requirements were going to be. And then we found out that it's going to be on the restricted side, so we moved it. So this just means that it moved to the restricted side. It's not that we lost it. It's just an accounting issue where we moved it. But that's why it makes it shows as a difference, right? And that's what we're talking about is the change from when we adopted to now first entering. So other state revenue, nothing, just negligible, nothing for much change. Total revenue overall on the unrestricted side was 3.2 more. Next slide, please. So here's our unrestricted expenditures. And so again, that column is the adopted budget, and we're comparing that to where we are now. And then we're going to show the difference. And typically, you will always have salary and benefit changes, because when we adopt the budget, we don't know a lot about some of the staff that we're going to have when school starts. Typically, we'll be estimating the new hires, what range or what step they'll come in on, what column, people that may be retiring that we weren't aware of. So fiscal and personnel will get together and they make sure all of that is balanced, and that's those changes. Books and supplies, we had a bit of an increase there, but and then our capital outlay, that increased, but it was purposeful because we had money sitting in our ending fund balance that wasn't up in the expenditures already, but it was waiting to be budgeted for some fairly big projects. We have the three classrooms at McKinney. We have the preschool classroom at Linda School. There was some for the transfer switch at the Foothill School. There was some for the Marysville locker room and so forth. But anyway, so our expenditures increased $5 million. And next slide, please. So now we're going to talk about, we have our revenues, our expenditures, other financing sources, and we have our ending fund balance. So that's the other important piece to our budget and general fund. Next slide. So I always like to know, our ending fund balance is one-time money, and that's just like maybe your savings account is how you could look at it. Once you spend it, it's gone. It's not something that you would ever spend something that occurs year after year, because you'll run out of money that way. So it's just for one-time expenditures. There's the unrestricted side and then the restricted. And we have, there's details of all of these balances in the summary of the, what do we call it? It's a narrative. We refer to it as a narrative. But it is it comes with your SACS board. The SACS budget report, and it's we call it the narrative, and it's got all of that, and the SACS reports have lists of what comprise these numbers. We have committed here, the revolving is basically just our petty cash plus inventory. We count in the ending fund balance the value of our inventory in the warehouse. And then down here on the unrestricted column, the committed, that's some, we call it OPEB, other post-employee benefit savings that we are slowly spending back into the general fund, and that'll be gone in a couple of years, taking off some of the burden of that. From for prior year savings, and then the assignments, and those are things like the first year of our COPS payment. That's also listed in our SACS report, and I have the pages there. Let's see. Page 36 lists all of the assignments. And then the economic uncertainty is a 3% state required amount based on the expenses and other financing sources total that they require as a reserve for a district. It would not be enough if we just had that 3% reserve. Then we also have the unassigned and appropriated $25.7 million. So that's our ending fund balance. And next slide, please. The other important piece that we look at, because this is how the County Office of Ed and then the state also determines the financial condition of our district. They look at the current year and the two subsequent years. And so this multi-year projection is always built on the assumptions that we know now, and it will change as those assumptions change. But right now, this next slide is going to show you where we are. Okay, so this is just very, there's a very detailed multi-year projection in your packet, and you'll see on the table of contents where it is. But this is just basically beginning balance, revenue, expenditures, transfers in and out, and then the total expenditures and transfers. And then, of course, down here, and so here's the first column is this current year, right now where we are, and then the two subsequent years are the other two columns. And as you can see, as we go through all of this, that we are deficit spending $3.4 million this year, but we still have a good healthy ending balance. So this is not a time that we need to panic, but we need to be aware. We do a little bit better next year with the deficit spending at 2.2, but then but this is the second year, this 2021-22, they're still holding the increase in pension costs at bay. So it's the 22-23, apologize for that. But that second year out, our pension increases, the percentage that we pay for every salary is going up. And I believe it was, I want to say about $1.4 million in additional pension costs starting this next year. And it had been happening to every school district since they changed the STIRS to 8.25, and it's at 16 or 17% now. So every year, districts have been having to absorb that. But anyway, we're then at the 6.5 deficit spending, but we still, you know, we still have a good ending balance. This is also in the 6.5. This is the year that we start paying back our certificates of participation payments, which were incurred many years ago when, as part of some of the new facility work in the district, there was a lot done, and then the Great Recession hit. And so the certificates of participation were refinanced to not start until later, expecting the economy to be better, the district better able to. So what we did this year is that with these historically low interest rates, it's called refunding the COPS. It's really like refinancing your home. We refinanced them to a better interest rate, and we saved, this would have been over $500,000 more, and that's going to be recurring every year for 20 years. We're saving $11 million in interest because the board was able to approve that COPS refunding. We just finished it, I think, last month, it seems like. So that's another, and that payment is it went from 2.8 million to 2.2, a little bit over 2.2. So that's part of why that, plus that those pension increases, you can see those two amounts right there equal that additional deficit spending, which we'll have to get in check, but, you know, we've got time. The thing is, we have time, so we're in good shape. Next slide. Risk factors. So what might harm the budget? And so this is part of the legislative analysts, also the common message that the county offices put together, that all school districts use for their different budget adjustments. It's like what's happening right now. So we don't know what the cost of mitigating learning loss over time is going to cost us, right? And then we have some changes in statute. So there's a lot of things here that are unknown as to what might, thankfully we're in a good budget position ending fund balance because, look, we've got SB 1159 on workman's comp. Our rates are most certainly going to increase just like every school year. We still have unknown COVID expenses. You know, if we end up having to pay for some testing, there's CBT, you know, our health carrier has some testing available, but it may not be nearly enough for what the expense to us could be. Unknown costs due to changes in accountability, the state's ability to sustain these deferrals, because that's an awful lot of deferrals. It could be that they make one of those or a certain percentage of it a permanent reduction. And then we would be absorbing that. But I think they did that back when they had deferrals many, many years ago. And they ended up, they do have to pay it back, but it would be when the state's revenue has that ability to do so. Litigation costs, you know, there's due process, COVID-19 exposure for the district. Cost of requirements to provide more services to our students in need, which, you know, we really need to do, but we're not sure what those may be at this time. So next slide. So that's pretty much the budget report. What'll happen next is we'll ask the board to approve these budget adjustments, the first interim budget, and then in January, we're gonna get to look at the governor's proposal for next year, and with all of these additional state revenues, you know, hopefully we've built everything on a zero COLA, cost of living adjustment at zero for this year and the two out years. But it could be, you know, who knows? Maybe there'll be a small COLA, which would be helpful. And then in March, I'll bring you a look again at this year further down the line. We'll take the picture January 31st and present to you in March. And I do want to also thank our fiscal department, Jennifer Pasalia, and I know Amy Littlefield helped a lot. They do a truly good job. There's 1,000 details to these budget reports, and they do an excellent job and give us a very accurate budget to work with. Thank you. Next slide. That's it. I know that's a tremendous amount of information, so.
I would just like to say thank you, Penny, and thank you to Jennifer and her team for putting that together. Board members, do we have questions or comments?
Yeah, Doug Criddle. Hey, Penny, nice job. I spent the entire weekend. This is my novel this weekend and very impressive. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer, for all of your help.
Okay, we'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mrs. Hasty. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Criddle. Doug Criddle. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boom, absent. Trustee Hasty.
Yes.
Trustee Gary Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Doug Criddle?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen? Yes. Motion carries. So we will be going back. Let's take maybe a 5-minute break that we're going to adjourn the open session and go back into closed session at 9:35. Thank you very much. 8:35. Sorry. Okay. Thank you very much, and we'll see the board members in a moment.